Kia ora and welcome to Beyond Consultation, a podcast that will help you in your public or community sector work to increase your impact by doing more than just ticking the box of consultation. I'm Paul McGregor from Business Lab, and we're interested in the mindsets and methods of people who are making a bigger impact by working collaboratively with communities, industries, and other organizations. Ngā mihi mō te whakaroa. Kia ora and welcome to episode 52. I've got a question for you. How can we create a country where everybody feels they belong? It's a powerful question, and it's not one that you can answer in a simple sentence, but that is the question at the heart of today's discussion. I'm really pleased to have on the show Anjum Rahman, who is the founder and now the project co-lead of Inclusive Aotearoa, or the full name is Inclusive Aotearoa Collective, Tahono. Back in episode 30, you might remember my interview with Chris Mene, who led an engagement process for the Royal Commission into the Christchurch mosque attacks. And that was all about how do you hold and guide a deeply emotional conversation when you also have a practical aim of uncovering what agencies could do to prevent similar attacks in the future. So that was one response to the Christchurch mosque attacks, one of many. Well, Inclusive Aotearoa is another response to those mosque attacks as one violent act too many for Anjum Rahman. We dive into the organization's origin story. I really appreciated Anjum's humility through that story, sharing on creating an organization that was te tiriti aligned. And she left me with a new appreciation, actually, of the difference between being te tiriti aligned and te tiriti based. One thing that has intrigued me about Inclusive Aotearoa was the approach that they were taking to enabling change, which was based on something called a constellations approach. And I wasn't really sure what that was, so I got Anjum to explain that to me, and you'll hear more about that in the show. Along with how can you host an effective conversation about something that's really personal? That question of how do we create a country where everybody feels they belong? And it's a question that really matters right now. And it's a question and a conversation that I think will leave you thinking differently about your place in your own community, in your own country. So without any further ado, please welcome to the show, Anjum Rahman. I'll hand it over to you to introduce yourself, not just to me actually, but to people listening as well.
Thank you for inviting me here. Yeah, my name's Anjum and I'm based in Kirikiriroa, Hamilton. And we got to Aotearoa, New Zealand on the 10th of June, 1972. And I was 5 years old and I arrived here. And so I've basically grown up here, did all my schooling here. My two daughters were born here. And yeah, it was interesting that when I was growing up here and particularly in the neighborhood that we were, there was not a lot of diversity. So at my school, I was the only person who wasn't Māori or Pākehā, which was really isolating and had a lot of impact and led to, for me at least, a lot of lack of self-confidence. And then growing up, you know, we, in terms of major incidents and things, when I think about especially the attacks in the US to the World Trade Center and Pentagon, that really led to a huge negative spotlight on our community. And I remember at that time really having this fear for my children that I didn't want them to feel that they had to hide who they were or feel ashamed of who they were. So this is why I do this kind of thing and a lot of public speaking, media, because I think that really is important. This space is just so critically important to me personally, but also that I feel that it's important for all communities, not just just ours.
And thank you for sharing your pepea there. And I know in Te Ao Māori, it's important to recognize the place where we first drew breath. Where was that for you, Andrew?
I was born in India, but I left when I was less than 2 years old. So a lot of times I don't feel Indian because Aotearoa has shaped who I am. So I feel that's a stronger part of my story. And so, yeah, it's interesting those issues of heritage, connection, belonging, and that's one of belonging is one of the things that we talk about a lot. And my sense of belonging is definitely here.
You strike me as a bit of a superhero in that, you've got the daytime, you're an accountant by trade, and then you sort of have this, it's probably not just nighttime, it's probably lots of time in early mornings and evenings and fighting this other good fight of social justice. How do those different worlds fit in for you?
Well, fortunately or unfortunately, I did stop being an accountant in December 2019. But before that, it was so how I made it fit was I would be working about 25 hours a week at accounting ever since my first child was born. And my mum kind of really pushed me to have more time available for my kids. And it was a real struggle. And so I thought, actually, she's got a valid point and I want more time. So I stopped being full time at that time. And then afterwards, I was earning enough that I didn't feel the need to do 40 or 60 or 80 hour weeks that corporate Aotearoa asks of us. So yeah, so it was that. And then that meant that I then had time. And so I did spend a lot of time in community organizations, and mostly it was voluntary work and helping to set up organizations, a lot of governance. I tried politics for a while unsuccessfully. That didn't work for me. But I learned a lot because aside from the messy and awful side of politics, which is, we can spend another podcast talking about that. It was also the opportunity to go out and meet people from all different walks of life. And what I learned from being in all these different spaces and all the different policy debates and discussions is absolutely invaluable in terms of my understandings of the people, of all of us who are here.
Yeah, what a baptism that is, just getting out on the streets and having conversations with ordinary folk, just living their lives and understanding what they care about.
Yeah,
And
absolutely.
And that might bring us then, 2019 to Inclusive Aotearoa Collective Tāhono, which is what we're here to have a kōrero about today, Anjum. Can you maybe start by sharing a bit of the origin story? What that was and what your connection to that was.
Yeah, I think sort of the origin story would be coming from our own community and advocating with government, particularly around 2015, 16, because of the issues that we were seeing. And as I said, I'd had this history in politics before, doing that. And it struck me that all the things that we needed as a community, they would work for all the other communities as well, that actually this needed to be a much broader conversation. And actually, at one point in 2017, asked government to do a national strategy for diversity and inclusion, which is what we called it then, which they didn't do. But after the Christchurch attack, when I thought about what was needed, it was still for me that space of if we are going to counter the kind of hate that we saw on that day and that expression of hate, we need to do it across communities. It's not like there's not one group that can fix it or one can't put it on one little sector of society anywhere, whether it's politicians or media or anything, that actually we need to all be working together on this. And so that was the genesis of how do we bring people from across different sectors? And I think one of the things that I also saw in my journey is that people were really living within their sectors and advocating. So whether it was rainbow communities or disabled people or so on, they have so many issues that they need to advocate on and that they need resolution to. But there weren't those spaces to bring people from all these different communities together on the things that we have in common. And so for me, that is what we're about, is this focus on belonging, on making sure that everyone in Aotearoa feels like they belong, and the practical working of how do we bring people together across communities to work on common issues to make change. So that's really, in a nutshell, what we're about and why we're doing that, because we know that we all have to live here together. We all have to get along, and we cannot live in the space where there's extreme violence, but even extreme hunger, extreme poverty, all of these things. And to me, that we only really fix these things if we do it together.
What I've noticed as an interested outside observer seeing this unfold is really careful choice of language. So, can you talk about that word belonging, but also, the words maybe that are used in your name and what those words mean to you?
Yeah, so sometimes it's really hard to find the words that fit. So we have these words because they were the best ones that we talk to people about what words to use. And even inclusion in and of itself, there's this power dynamic. And it's interesting, sometimes people will say, around inclusion, being asked to the dance or whatever, being invited to the dance. And it's like, well, actually, inclusion is when you get to be the one to invite. When it's so much is around power dynamics, and so who gets to be doing the including, who gets to be doing the invite, that's all tied up in the in those words, and unpacking that takes conversations. And belonging was just, it was interesting. So in 2020, when we traveled to 46 towns and cities across the Motu, and we had online conversations, and we asked people those basic questions around belongings: when do you feel like you belong, what stops you, and what needs to change? And people would say, well, what do you mean by belonging? And we'd do that old thing of, well, what do you mean by belonging? What does it mean to you? What does that look like? We're not going to define it for you. Right. And so it was very much allowing people to define for themselves what that meant. If I said what it means to me, what does belonging mean? That I feel connected in my community, I feel seen, I feel valued, I can participate, all of those things. But every word has contested meanings, and we try and choose ones that give people the breadth and scope, and that they might connect to those words in terms of the work that we do.
You mentioned in the conversations that you're having to unpack these ideas and these words. And, as soon as you start talking about anything like power or privilege, or there's a you have to be careful about how you frame up that conversation. So I wonder if you can share with people what you've been thinking about as you've been out there having these conversations with people in terms of how you have that conversation.
Yeah, so when we thought about the questions that we asked, and they're all on our website, the things that we were specific in thinking about it, and also having the experience of being in any number of central government and local government consultations, our first question was, where does the power in the room sit? And we were very clear that the power in the room has to sit with the participants, not with us as facilitators, that this is their space for them to tell their experiences and their stories. Secondly, we thought about accessibility, and we thought about all the different types of people we wanted to talk to. And just as a side note, our thinking sort of developed into the broadest view of diversity. So it wasn't just the things that we normally hear about around ethnicity, culture, disability, rainbow. We also wanted income diversity, neurodiversity, rural versus urban, all the different wonderful ways that people, express and experience life. So thinking about those different wonderful ways, we knew we would be dealing with people who might have literacy skills or language skills or disabled people and various things. So we wanted to keep the language simple and accessible. We never used words like power and privilege and all of those things in the room. Those questions had to be available for Pākehā male, as well as for a recent asylum seeker who still is grappling with their level of English, all of the things. And so we were very deliberate in language, and then we were deliberate in the design of the conversation. So we saw the questions as conversation starters.
Right.
And that the participants, that we allowed them to direct the conversation to a certain extent. So we set a broad boundary or parameter that we're here to talk about belonging. That's all we're talking about. And then within that, whatever you want to talk about, whatever direction it goes, we made sure that we talked very little. So we try and keep the introduction short, 10, 15 minutes, and spend most of the time given over to the conversation. And we tried to create that environment where it was an informal conversation, that it was just share whatever you feel comfortable sharing. And we our value set around that is this absolute trust and belief that people are the experts in their own lives, and they know what they need, and they know what's not working, they know what's working, and, you know, that we trust them to have that knowledge and experience, and that matters. Like, everybody is an expert in themselves. That's the one thing that they're an expert on. And they've lived what they've lived, and that's their experience, and that has to be honoured. So yeah, it was all of that approach around humility, of value, thinking about power, allowing them to lead the conversation. So that was all built into the process of how we ran those conversations.
Well, it's funny hearing you describe that, because I've been in some work hui this week where we're preparing for some conversations where people are really nervous about that kind of approach, and they're scared and worried about managing expectations. And so I'm interested in what you notice as the benefits of allowing more time for people to share themselves, rather than it being directed so much from the facilitators in the center.
Yeah, we've helped others with talking to community, and it's really hard, and especially in a public sector space, government space, I think it's really hard for them to lose control. You know, that's the fear, and it's really hard for them to let go, right? And the need to be defensive. You know, they're in a position, and I think everyone feels vulnerable to attack, right? And they feel vulnerable to criticism. And that's, you know, that's a human experience. It's human nature. But when you can let go of the need to defend, and when you can let go of the need to control, and trust the space and trust the people, and allow them to express that experience, and allow them to be angry, allow them to be upset, allow all of that, and present with aroha and hold it, right, and value it, then you can trust that process. It's what you bring in the room, and the vibe that you're giving out. And if they say something that you feel is unfair or wrong, it doesn't matter. One of the things, it was actually quite difficult sometimes, because in that space, when we were having the conversations, we had to not judge. And people were saying some problematic things and hurtful things sometimes. We were mindful that they weren't hurting other participants in the room.
Right.
So talking about that, it was, you know, for me as a person to have to listen to some of those things was really hard. But we didn't challenge them. We weren't there to persuade them. We were there to listen. And what would happen, therefore, is as they were going through and saying some of these things, the other stuff that was coming out, you know, that then that they opened up and then started talking about some experiences which we otherwise would not have heard if we had been judgmental in that place. So there was always that balancing act. And so we were really mindful of how we created the space, how we split people into groups, who was with who. We would have 4 to 6 people with one facilitator. And we learned that we have to think about who's in the room and how we manage the conversation so that nobody leaves feeling like really awful. They were emotional conversations, so we had to be mindful of mental health. But the way that we finished on the what needs to change and allowing people to talk about what they want to see different, they ended up leaving in a really positive space. So even if they had been tears and emotion and so on, they left the conversation feeling positive. And I think it also helped that they left feeling heard and feeling valued. So the ability, and there were a few times where people were like, I have never told anyone about this. And you could tell, you could see it, you could see that it was a relief to be able to tell. But you
There's a
do
weight off them.
But you do have to be really careful. And we were well aware, like we really also did think a lot about the mental health implications and the design, and for some of our bigger hui, we actually would have a counselor in the room and pay for that, because we know that sometimes these conversations can be fraught.
Thank you for sharing, and I'm really getting a sense of the manaakitanga, the care and reciprocity that you're showing to those people who show up to share their stories, and stories that they might have been shutting away from themselves for some time. I might take us from there and shift the conversation a little bit, Anjum. Being a Te Tiriti-based organisation and movement is key for you. So I'd love to hear a little bit about what that journey has looked like and felt like for you.
Yeah, so we like to use the word Te Tiriti aligned. We don't like to claim things that are beyond where we are, because we know that we have got a long way to go in this space. When we started the organization, as I was thinking about what it needed to be like, it was really important to me to think about partnership, and that we can't have inclusion or belonging or any of these things in our country unless Māori tangata whenua have equal power. It's a key part of the whole thing. So I knew what I wanted. I'd seen examples of organizations like Tua Nest and in the sexual violence space, where they had a tauiwi caucus and a tangata whenua caucus and those kinds of arrangements. And I was like, I had that, but I really don't know how to go about this stuff. It's not their expertise. I can't determine those things. So the first thing that I did was have conversations and use my networks as well as people that I met to say, this is what my aspiration for the organization is. We want to work in a way that reflects a Te Tiriti partnership. How do we go about that? What does that mean?
It's nice to hear you starting from that place of humility, because I think a lot of people think that they need to kind of have the answer before they even go out and ask the question, but it doesn't sound like that was where you were coming from at all. It was more a curiosity.
Well, it was more of it can't come from me, right? It needs to come from tangata whenua, and actually recognizing that I'm relying on their generosity to even come and be part of this conversation and offer any advice and so on. So, and people were generous, and I did have a lot of conversations, and each conversation would progress my thinking. And then I ended up having conversations with Te Huia Bill Hamilton, who was part of Potikanga of the Iwi Chairs Forum. And he has been incredibly generous and spent a lot of time with us. And as we got to the end of 2020, and we were looking for what the team might look like in 2021 as we moved into the phase of developing these constellations, I said to him, look, I'm happy for you to appoint some of the team. I'm happy to give over one FTE. I'm happy for that team to have control of this amount of funding that we have, and look at how we can start building that partnership. So that happened, and he, again, it's hugely generous. He found us three facilitators, and so they came into our team through Potikanga, whereas the rest of the team came through your normal model of putting out ads and doing job interviews and all of those. I would say that it's not been an easy journey, right? It has been quite difficult. I think, to be honest, some of it was my own lack of, I'm an accountant, I'm not a project manager. And I didn't have some of those skills. Also, our own ignorance, and you can have all the goodwill of the world, but when you don't understand how things should work, that can hamper. So really, it
Can I
does.
jump in with a question there? If you were to give Anjum from 2020 some advice now, what advice would you give her?
To listen better, to make space, to ask for help more. I think some of those things. And you've mentioned the word humility. I think that's hugely important. Doing some of those things, I think, is critical. And then when we got to around June, July 2021, they said, look, we need to have a Māori co-lead. And I'm like, thank goodness. Yes, we do. I need support in terms of my own leadership skills or lack of skills that there are gaps and there are strengths, as everyone has, and I really needed support with the gaps. And so we moved to a co-lead arrangement. And again, learnings from that is having really strong communications, making sure you're consulting, really understanding. I had been working in this organization. I was one of the founders of it. And I developed the style of working and the relationship that I had with some of the team who'd been there prior to this new team coming in. And so you're still in those habits and you forget to consult and you forget to communicate. And it was just like,
whoops.
I definitely think that I've learned a lot around that. It does take a shift in mindset. So this year, who was our co-lead, was amazing. She wanted to step off to do other work. We've only just recently, and when I say it's been 2 weeks today, had our next co-lead, who is Gareth Jones, and he is Te Aroa Tainui. And it's just lovely having him on the team, and we're still in that, getting each other's face and him getting to know us and all of those things. But me also just being very mindful of, okay, what did you learn from working with Kiriana, and making sure that I try and be better.
Slow down, listen, and create space for them.
Yeah. And I'm very clear that it is co-lead. That means that it has to be equals, and I have to think of that this is a person who is equally leading with me, and that is my mindset.
Which is hard when you've been the founder of a thing.
But it's like, again, it's that being the change that you want to see in the world, that I have to learn to live it. And the other thing is, that it's okay to be wrong. Allowing yourself to make mistakes. And that's something that I've found really hard. I think because I was a high achiever at school, I always got good marks and all of those things. So doing things badly is always a little bit of a crisis for a lot of, and I think that
that's pretty common. Yeah.
Feel that, that we have to be on our game all the time. And we live in a society that lauds success and achievement and really punishes failure quite harshly. And to actually try and be more gentle with ourselves around it's okay to fail. It's okay to be wrong. We don't have to be defensive about it. We don't have to, crush ourselves. And I'm still learning that.
How do you put that into practice on the day-to-day basis?
Yeah, it's really hard. I'm learning to speak more and be more vulnerable. So within the team, to be able to say, okay, I'm having a panic attack about this thing. Can someone help me? And they do. They do help me. And they know I'll be there for them if they need it. So just, again, I think in terms of leading the organization, to not have to be always in charge and always on top of it and always perfect, but to be vulnerable to your team, I think that's important. I do have peer supervision in place, so having someone to talk to, and I think once my co-lead is a bit embedded, a bit more, being able to have those open conversations with each other of, this is where I'm feeling weak, this is where I'm feeling vulnerable, this is where I need support, and being able to offer support as well. Where there might be gaps for the other person. So some of that, and then the self-care. It takes a lot and a long time to not be beating yourself up, especially when you've had a history. I did a course in 2017 with the Leadership New Zealand Trust, which I found really, really helpful. I think that was the year in that course where I realized just how unkind I was being to myself.
Right.
And then when the person, Louisa, was leading us, and she said, not to me personally, she said to the group, you're kind to other people. You need to turn that kindness to yourself. And that was a novel concept to me.
Yeah, well.
It just was this like, oh, I have to be equally kind to myself as I am to everyone else. And I'm not saying that I'm by any means perfect in being kind to everyone else, but I'm definitely worse at being kind to myself. And I certainly was at that point. And then you become aware of that inner voice and the self-talk. And sometimes it's like, That isn't me talking. That's somebody else's voice that I'm repeating. That's somebody else who has been saying that to me that I'm repeating as if it's my own voice. So that is critical. And the thing is, what I've decided since then is that actually, if you don't learn to be kind to yourself, how on earth are you going to properly be kind to others?
In those moments where things are really heated, right? That's when whatever you've been able to program in yourself really comes out. I read something recently, which was a quote that has been sticking with me this week, that there's no societal change without organizational change, and there's no organizational change without individual change. And they're all connected. So how we show up in a space is going to depend on how others show up and how all of those things kind of work together. So thank you for sharing about your own humility and your own journey as a Te Tiriti aligned organization and where you're taking that. Really appreciate the vulnerability that you've shared with us there. What I might move us on to now is unpacking a bit more of how, as an organization, you've approached building this quite significant movement of people who are working together. And you've got certain models that you've been trying to apply and adapt, the constellation model and wayfaring as an approach of understanding how to navigate through some of the things that you're working on. Can you share with us a little bit of why you chose those and how you're using them?
Yeah, so actually, one of our funders gave us the constellation model, and I had a look at it and I thought, yeah, that actually suits what we want to do. So there's some key components, and I'm not going to do diagrams or anything, but some of the key components of the model is that you have a host organization and they hold all your funding and so on. Then you have a secretariat, which is basically what we are, and that's kind of described as the oil in the machine. So our role is to do all the organizational tasks, find a date for the meetings, facilitate the meeting, take the minutes, get the minutes out, implement the decisions, all of those kinds of things that really exhaust people in communities. And that's sometimes why things just don't happen, because just getting all of that nitty-gritty organizational work, it takes a lot of time, and it saps the energy out of putting the work in the mahi. And then you have like this, what the model calls a stewardship group, and we're kind of calling a core group. And this is the group from the community, the cross-sector group. And so when we look at it, we try and make sure that we have representation from as wide a range of different communities as we can without blowing out the size of the group.
So how big is that group?
So generally, our groups are around 9 or 10 people at the moment, and we've been having this conversation around how do we grow it? What does it look like? And the model in Canada was really in the house space, and they would have constellations of 1,000 people. And I'm like, ah, what does that look like? How would we manage that? And we're certainly not anywhere near that yet. But I think the focus is with the core group is that we're there to support them. We're there to convene them. We're there to listen to them. So we don't intervene. We don't hold the decision-making power. We don't tell them what to do. If they need advice, we would offer advice because we've had some experience, and we can say, well, we've seen this works or that doesn't work.
And so you've got one of these core groups or lots of them dotted around the country?
So we've tried various things. Right now, we've got two that are working, a couple that have sort of lapsed. Sometimes we've been asked to come in and we facilitate, and then the group goes off and they don't need us. So we've had a couple of those experiences, and it's great because we've done our job of helping them activate. So we didn't, they've come to us, they've said, we want to do this. They know who to invite into the room, and we can help them with any logistics, but also sending down the facilitators and making sure that the conversation is productive and gets them to where they want to go. And then if they say, right, we know where we're going now, we're done, we've left them. And like one of the groups actually in Nelson that was around anti-racism, our team came in, we had a couple of facilitators. That group has been ongoing doing work, and they've asked us to come back. So two of my team will be going to Nelson in September for welcoming week to run a series of hui there. And it's lovely. And in the interim, you know, we've heard about some of the things that they've been doing, which sound great. So yeah, sometimes it's light touch, just go in, come out, wait for them to come back to us. Sometimes it's us inviting people in the room and working with them and nurturing them, really. Yeah, so it's a mix.
So I've heard others describe that as a backbone role. So you're kind of the spine that allows others to be what they need to be. Yeah, by taking the load off of activity that just drains energy. Yeah.
And always mindful. So we had a really good hui this morning and with the core group, and we invited others in. And when we were talking about it, and I was like, who's going to be presenting and all of those? And I said, I'm telling you one thing, it's not going to be me. This is your project. You need to be the face of the project. You need to present. So in big and little ways, making sure that they hold the ownership, we hold the ownership. And that's really important, to not insert yourself in terms of, again, it's about power. Where does the power sit in the room? And it's should not absolutely sit with us.
So that's the constellation model, which sounds basically like this is how we structure ourselves as an organization. And then the wayfinding approach, can you share
So
what does that mean
not,
to you and how you've used it?
Yeah, we don't run the wayfinding approach. What we've done is we invited Flying Geese, who run one of the groups that run a wayfinding approach, and they facilitated a big hui for us in November last year. They designed the wayfinding and did that for us. We don't claim to be experts in any way on wayfinding, and I think it's better that I say less and allow a group like that to speak to it, because it's a very Pacifica model, and I'm not Pacifica. I wouldn't want to act like I know all about it. I mean, I understand it. I know the components and all of those things, but we're not running wayfinding hui ourselves. We use a different style of engagement in terms of our community, you know, when we're talking to community. But we thought the approach was really useful to help guide us in terms of getting the constellations started and moving and so on. And it was really helpful. It's a lovely way to structure and think about and hold those conversations that groups need to have in terms of finding the way to where they want to be and how to get there.
Well, that sounds like it might be another podcast episode itself.
I think so.
I've just been in communication with Shelley Spiller recently, and hopefully having her on the show next year, because it's been amazing to see how wayfinding has Shelley and the team haven't promoted it, and it's just sort of bubbling away and naturally spreading around, which is really amazing to see. What is next for Inclusive Aotearoa Collective Tāhono, and how can people get involved?
Yeah, so one of the things is that we have decided to redo some of the belonging conversations, and we always had planned to do that because we know that things shift, things change, what's at the top of people's minds changed, and we wanted to make sure that we refresh and are up to date in terms of our understanding of what's happening in the community. So we're doing our belonging conversations again with a virtual road trip, talking to community. And if you have a group of people, it could be your organisation, it could be your neighbours, whatever, sports group, anything, we would love to come in and run a 90-minute conversation, and then with a little bit of afternoon tea or morning tea or whatever afterwards. We're really open to that. Even though we've used the conversations to inform our work, what we've found is the process itself has been uplifting for people in those conversations, that they're actually an end in themselves sometimes, just being in the conversation. And when we ask people what needs to change, sometimes they would say, we need more conversations like this. So here we are, definitely in Kirikiriroa, Hamilton, on the 13th of September. So please get in touch with us through our website, kiora@inclusivealtieroa.nz. We're on social media. And secondly, if you know, we're always looking to activate groups. So if there's a need that you think that you see in community and you want partners and you want us to help you with that process, we're always here. We want to seed more constellations. We want to seed more community groups. It can be, you know, the there's one that's really at a national level, another one that's quite localized. We can be regional, we can be very neighborhood in terms of those constellations. We're open to all of those things. All we need is people that are keen to make a change. You know, that are keen to make a difference, that are keen to build up communities. That's and if what the thing that you want to do doesn't fall within scope for us, we also know people, so we might be able to find someone else that can help you.
Awesome, thank you for sharing those invitations. And you've actually, you know, you've got me pondering, you know, what is in my own life where I might be able to start that kind of conversation. So yeah, I see you almost just wandering around just planting these seeds, and some of them will grow and some of them won't. And
yeah,
that's
how I see it. I think one of the things I missed out of the model is that magnetic attractor. So it has to be that thing that they're really attracted to, that they want to change, your key core issue that you're dealing with, that is, that gets people like really motivated to say, yep, we need to do
that's
this.
It. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm curious, maybe as a place to start closing up, Anjum, I imagine this sounds like pretty intense work for you. And as you said, you know, you're trained as an accountant and now you've got this sort of a project manager role and this leadership role. And what is it that keeps you personally going through this?
I think it's the experiences and the people and the community. So, you know, we sit in these meetings and the conversations will be so uplifting. Like one of the projects that we've done or partnered with Yes Disability and a few other groups, organisations and ministries is called the Inclusive Faith Project. And it's about how do we make sure that faith communities are much more inclusive and accessible to disabled people?
Mm.
And so we had this that I facilitated on Kirikiroa. We had people from faith communities, we had disabled people, we had the conversation, and you just walk out of there feeling like, wow, that was so powerful. And the aim is to build a resource that all faith communities can use. So we want to talk to people first so that we had the wealth of information to build this resource. And it feels like this is a space where we can make change in the world, and it feels powerful. It feels awesome to just be there and be part of it. So sometimes when things aren't going so well, or where I feel like, oh my God, it's so hard, or that didn't work, oh my God, that was a flop. Put so many hours into this one and it just isn't going anywhere. It's just to hold onto the spaces and things that work. One of the other things that we do is, and we certainly haven't advertised it, but people come to us to ask for training around how to do belonging and inclusion or diversity and inclusion. And so we have a training package, and delivering those, again, it's always, it feels like really positive, really powerful, and feeling like you're making a difference in the world. I think that is that's what keeps me going and keeps me invested in this.
Yeah, I can see your face just lighting up as you're describing that hui in particular, of the feeling of hope coming through you.
Yeah.
So, Anjum, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your story, and to you and all the team for the mahi that you're doing out there.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Beyond Consultation podcast. What did you learn from the show? What should we have talked about? Who else should I interview? I would love to hear your feedback. And if you want to learn more about what you heard today, everything from the show is at www.businesslab.co.nz/podcast. If this episode has left you with a burning question, please feel free to submit a voice message through the link on our podcast page. We can then ask that question of a guest in a future episode. Or tag me in a post on LinkedIn or Facebook and I can point you in the right direction. If you want to know when we release new episodes, make it easier for yourself and subscribe on your podcast platform of choice. Again, thank you for listening. Ngā mihi mō te whakarongo.